What's going on, guys? This is Billy Alvaro, the Unstoppable BA, and this is episode number 36, Unstoppable REI Wealth. Today, no solo cast. Today, me not interviewing anybody. Today, what's going to be happening is I'm going to get interviewed on somebody else's show, Hindsight Hacking, but I'm going to launch it as my own. And the reason being, I owe a lot to these two cool cats that are going to be interviewing me. It's Carter and Cole from Hindsight Hacking. And the reason why I'm hosting their show on mine is because they were the two people who helped me launch the podcast. If you want to get into podcasting, if you want to learn about real estate investing, they asked me some killer questions. It's about an hour long. Hope you enjoy it. Hope you enjoy this little mix of what I'm doing with Unstoppable REI Wealth. Hope you enjoy it.
Welcome to Unstoppable Real Estate Investing Wealth. My name is Billy Alvaro, aka the Unstoppable VA. Former billion-dollar mortgage banker, gone bankrupt, turned professional real estate investor, where each week you'll learn the tools, strategies, systems, and secrets myself and other highly successful real estate investing entrepreneurs use to start, grow, and scale their businesses, creating massive profits, and how you can too. And we'll teach you how to put those profits to work so you no longer have to. Get ready to finally experience financial freedom and generational wealth. Now let's get started.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Hindsight Hacking. And today's very special guest, Mr. Billy Alvaro, the Unstoppable BA. And, you know, Billy holds a little special place in our heart because we get to hang out with his podcast, Unstoppable REI Wealth. It is an amazing podcast for anybody out there interested in the real estate environment. Head on over to Unstoppable REI Wealth and any of your podcasting platforms. Now, one story about Billy. He is a person that we get to talk about the story where he went flat broke. $14 million in debt.
That's not flat broke. That's like minus broke.
And so much more from the mortgage industry when it crashed. And now he is killing it, doing deals all day long. I think I saw somewhere over 1,500 deals that you've done over the past. I forget exactly what the number was. But Billy, man, I love what you do. I love the work you put out there and how you go about your business every day. So thank you so much for being on the show, my friend.
Carter and Cool, it's a pleasure being here. And listen, before we start, shout out to the both of you guys. I found you accidentally online when I was going through this whole podcast thing. And you know, I'm not getting paid for this, but working with both of you, the professionalism and the system that you guys had to launch the podcast, you guys killed it. I appreciate it. And what you're doing for me now with the whole podcast thing and my videos, it's like you two guys are two very special people. I can't wait to get out of virtual land and hang out with you guys personally, because it's like, you're my type of people.
Ah, yeah, I love it. I love it. And it's funny because I think what really got me hooked into like really wanting to do real estate is when you went to Costa Rica for a month and you did everything virtual. Before we get into that, I was like, I got to ask him about that, but we will. But before we get started, why don't you give a little backstory about who is the BA here?
Yeah. So the Unstoppable BA, my name, and I live it every day. I am a guy who has a passion for real estate. I have a passion for helping people. I just love growing and I love making shit happen. And I found my calling in this real estate market. I've been involved with real estate since I think I was like 19, 20 years old when I bought my first house, about 19 or 20. But I've had a passion for it since I was about 13 or 14 years old. I always knew I was going to do it, but it took me some years to get it going. And then once I got out of my last life, which was the mortgage business, the whole thing crumbled. I was $14 million in debt. I had to reinvent myself and I had an epiphany. It was July 4th, 2009 and Independence Day, and it was my rebirth. And I figured out that this was the path I was going to go on. And I had no money, had no job, had no credit. And I was close to $14 million in debt. So all that on my back, but I still had a desire and I knew what I wanted to do. I just didn't know the how. And that's the important thing I tell a lot of people. Like, you don't have to know how to do things. You just have to burn desire for what you want to do. And that how eventually over time is going to come. And for me, it came. But it took a lot of self-study, a lot of coaching, a lot of mentoring, and just absorbing. But the key thing is a lot of guys and girls out there that want to get into any type of business, they want to do it. They start going out and they're learning everything, but they don't actually apply what they're freaking learning. Mm-hmm. So you get stuck in this dog chasing the tails, spinning around, and they're like, it's not working. I need more information. Listen, You don't need more information. What you need is to pull your big boy pants up and start making action. Start making something happen. You're going to fail. You're going to screw up. Things are going to go wrong. But you'll learn what not to do, and you'll be on the right track eventually.
I love that. And you talk about that so much on your show. You're like, I don't care if you listen to this, but you take one thing, like just take one thing and then go put it into play. And every time you are given those tips and tricks on your show, even from your guests that come on, you keep preaching, go take some massive freaking action, people.
MFA. I mean, and look, you know, I had a couple of people tell me, what happens if I'm not in a position where I'm not mentally there. I have a lot of stress on my shoulders and I'm going through a tough time. Listen, overnight, you're not going to be a success. Overnight, you're not going to be able to start taking MFA, but it starts with taking little moves on a daily basis, little consistent active moves that you start to do in a daily. And when you do that, you start to get momentum. And then over time, that momentum becomes MFA, massive freaking action, where you're able to just implement like a beast, and perpetually you just start getting better at what you're doing.
Yeah, I think it's funny. So I got to tell, this is like opening the curtains here for a second. You're one of the few podcasts that Corey and I will fight over who's going to edit. So Corey was editing for a while, and then I would listen to it, and then I started editing for a while, and he's like,
what's going on in Billy's show?
I missed listening to Billy's show and editing it. And I was like, you can listen to it on the podcast platform, of course.
There's always that behind the scenes shit though, right?
Right. No, but the amount of information you give freely on your show, it's unbelievable. I mean, we tell people all the time, give without expecting something in return. Yeah. And guess what will happen? You'll get something in return because the universe will conspire to give that to you. You do that, man. Like you have your BillySecrets.com, that there's so much stuff that people can just go there. But if they don't implement it, it's useless.
It's useless. It's just useless. I mean, it's like Google. I mean, you could Google anything and find out anything about anything. It's what you do with that information. And we're no longer in the information age. Like we're in the information overload age. Right. So in order to get yourself to the next level with anything, look, you have to learn, you have to read, you have to study. When you're doing it, I found that if you actually implement as you learn, you get to where you want to go a whole lot faster. If you constantly just absorb and bring it in, and you, for me at least, because I did that years back, you just become a wealth of information, but you're not doing anything with it. And then you forget half the stuff you learn because you have to relearn it. So if you learn and do, it's almost like learn and teach. Learn something, teach it, you absorb it even further. And so that's what I've been practicing for the last 10, 15 years of my life. And it works for me because I know it works for other successful people. So when I see something working, I just implement it. And then the magic happens. Shit happens.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right. So you made a crucial adjustment, if I remember correctly, around the time the pandemic hit last year. And I forget exactly what that was, where you were running ads, you were doing one play for your marketing to get leads, and then all of a sudden you were no longer being even. You were no longer making the money on it that you were. And so you had to make this massive shift. And I just kind of want to hear that story here because I love the flexibility, the adaptability that occurred from that to keep your business moving forward. And then I feel like if I remember correctly, you were working less before the pandemic to all of a sudden you're putting in monster days after that and just hitting the road, hitting the gas on everything.
So that's a great question. And I'm going to explain what went on. So pre-pandemic for a good solid 3 years, right? The business, I set this business up so it can run without me. I wanted a self-sufficient business, not have me have to be there every single day. And it took me about 5-6 years to get to that point. And then when I was at that point, I'm like, this is pretty cool. Like I could have the business serve me now. And I did just that. I'm always a worker. Like I'm always doing something. But in that particular business with EasySell, it was maybe 4, 5, 6 hours a week. At most, I was working 10 to 12 hours a week in the business because I had multiple meetings. That was it. 3 years that went on and I was enjoying life and loving things. And I didn't have my foot on the gas pedal when I was really hyper growing the business because I was comfortable. I wanted to enjoy the fruits of my labor. Pandemic hit. I went right back to 2006 when I lost the business. If I would have done things differently back then, took MFA, made decisions hard and quick, cut the fat really freaking fast, I would have still had the mortgage bank. Unfortunately, I didn't do that. So I learned. When the pandemic hit this time around, I went into like war zone mode. I locked myself in my home office for 2 days and I just went through the P&L and started cutting out every single line item I didn't need, put pauses on things that I did need, but that I wasn't going to pay right now, made arrangements with every single vendor I had out there. And I cut over $72,000 a month overnight. And I shut my office down. We went virtual. I didn't think we were going to go virtually 100%. We stayed virtual until like June. And that was what, 3.5, 4 months? And I said, well, maybe 3 months. And I said, you know, this is working virtually. I never saw myself without an office. What am I going to do to get myself back into this game and get back into this game and live in New Jersey while having the office in New York? And I said, you know what? I'm going to shut the office, keep it shut down, go virtual. I surveyed all my employees and all of them across the board said, we're working better working from home. We're more productive. And so to lead up to your question about the marketing piece, pre-pandemic, we were putting out $70,000 a month on marketing, 120,000 postcards a month, TV, ads, radio show, Google, pay-per-click, Facebook, door knocking, telemarketing. Like we had an army of marketing because here on my show, marketing is the lifeblood of every business. But when the pandemic hit, I didn't think we were going to have the times we're having now, which were booming. I went and said, holy shit, this is going to be the next downturn. So New York got shut down, so did Jersey. So I put a complete stop on all my marketing for a solid 5 months, March, May, June, July, August, maybe until August. But we still drove in business because we had a database filled with leads that we were bringing in over the course of like 10 years. So instead of us not doing anything, we just went back into the database and did database mining. And from that, we sustained the business. We didn't nearly do as many deals as we did when we were marketing, but we sustained. And I realized, and my team realized, we don't need nearly as much marketing as we thought we did to drive the business forward. You still need the market, but you need to be wise with your marketing dollars. So what we did is we did a reversal. We're spending a fraction of the money up front to drive in new leads, and we've expanded the back office. So when leads come in, we have heavy-duty marketing on the back end, remarketing the clients already called in. In March, I think I posted it, we did 22 deals in March. In April, we brought in 18 deals. And now this is at a fraction of the money we were spending pre-pandemic.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I think that's amazing the one thing I've learned just from listening to your show and knowing you is that the massive freaking action. Like, I love it. And you live that, right? I know you've been on a top of a dime and run the other way. What the other piece that I want to touch on, because I absolutely love it, is you name your projects. I think that's cool, not only for you to like keep it in track since there's 22 things, but your teams, you can go, how's the London Bridge house going?
Yes.
Right? That's awesome. How do you come up with these names?
It's funny you said that because I only started doing that about 8 weeks ago.
Really?
And I love it. Only about 8 weeks ago. And I said, you know, I want to start naming the houses and I want people. And now what I'm getting, the funny thing is, I have people hitting me on social media, DMing me, PMing me, texting me. And they're like, yo, what's up with the Meathead house?
Yeah,
what's
the Meathead house?
What's going on? I never, the double decker Pecker Wrecker house. What's going on with that? They're all like, I feel like I'm part of the process and I want to see what's going on with the next step. So now I realized naming a house, and I got to be honest with you, I got this from watching Donald Trump. Every time Donald Trump, this is funny, every time this guy would get up, he would name somebody on the opposite side, he would give them a name, a very distinctive name, and he would say that name 5, 10, 20 times. Pocahontas, Pocahontas. You know who Pocahontas is. He would name all the people on the other side. So I'm like, and it would stick in people's heads, whether they like Trump or not.
Right.
Always stuck in their heads what he was saying about the other people. So I said, you know what? Let me start naming my houses. Who cares about the Beechwood house and the Marlboro house? Let's get these houses unique names, something that it represents the house, something funny. And I got to tell you, it's been taking off. People love it.
I love it.
You're getting people invested in the journey. Maybe they're watching. Maybe they're the lurkers that aren't ready to do business yet. But now they're invested in what's going on. So when they are ready, like, it's never going to be a question of who they're going to enlist to get help with, right? Like, it's going to be the person that they've been following on the story for the London Bridge house or whatever home that comes in, right? So, yeah, I love that. And definitely taking people on the journey is so cool.
Yeah, and bringing them along with you, it gets them involved. And they actually then, when you are posting stories, it gets them to want to watch because I'll put a little blurb. you know, the Meathead House update, London Bridge House update.
Yeah,
you
know, I've been watching them. Like, what's going on with that?
Yeah. And they see the progress and they're like, holy shit, like I'm understanding what you're doing. Because everybody, I've got hit across the board. They're like, dude, why did you buy that London Bridge House? That is the ugliest thing I've ever seen. Like, you got to have vision.
Right.
I see what this house is going to look like.
I've loved watching your projects come together because they're freaking night and day. And we could talk projects all day long. We could talk about how you're making money. I want to talk about something that's unique, I feel, in your realm of business, I think, to you. And this is where you're doing JV partners with people, but you don't do it to hurt them or screw them. You're doing it truly to help them. And you truly want to help every single person that you're working with, and you give them options and you're like, hey, this might work, this might not work. One story that really resonated was, I think the parents died, you had him on your show and he wasn't sure he was gonna go with you, and you went over and above and you're like, hey, I don't even know where we're gonna end up, but we're gonna make sure we get this guy what we said we would do. Period, end of story. And you ended up giving him more. So obviously you were happy, he was happy, everyone was happy. And the people that bought their house was happy as well, because now, if I remember correctly, his daughter has kids in the same neighborhood and the family that bought their house is a family with kids. So it was important to him that he sold it the right way. And so I just want people to really understand, it's not all about money with Billy. He really, truly cares for people and wants to help people in whatever situation they happen to be in.
It's got to, and I'm glad you brought that up, Ron, because I get this a lot when I post on social media. I get a lot from realtors where they're like, you should be discussing with yourself buying somebody's house like that. They can list it on the open market, get so much more. And I'm like, they could. And guess what I tell them? You should list your property on the open market. You'll get so much more. Like, we bought a house around the corner here in Marlboro where I live. And this lady came off of a sign. She called up, we got the lead in, and this is when I was first training the call. So I was going on appointments, which was kind of cool because I've been out of the game for so long. I haven't gone on appointments because I've been like running the business.
Right.
And so when we went there, Nicole's like, she has an offer for 275 and the person's getting a mortgage. And I'm like, we're never going to be anywhere close to that. She should take the 275. I went out to the house and I have a thing. When I go to somebody, it's all about no like and trust. I don't care what business you're in, what you're selling, what you're buying, even doing business with you guys. No like and trust. If I didn't like you guys, I would not be doing business with you. You gotta like the people you're doing business with.
Right.
Go to the house. I'll make a long story short. We're in there an hour and a half. They showed us the property. They showed us everything. We went through the whole nine yards. I didn't talk about a number not one time. 90 minutes in, she's like, what do you think? I go, I'm going to treat you guys, because they were a little bit older than me, not much. So I wasn't going to call my mom and dad. I said, I'm going to treat you guys like my brother and sister. If you were coming to me for advice, I would tell you, you have an offer for $275,000. It's a great offer. I would take the offer if I was you. Let me just take you through the challenges and the steps you're going to have to go through in order to make this offer come to fruition. And I didn't lie or miss. I just told them the process they were going to go through, the inspections with the town, getting a mortgage, all the stuff that he knew was wrong with the property. He said, you're going to have to fix this because in Jersey, you have to do a CO inspection before it. So I just laid everything out. Didn't give him an offer. They said, if you did buy it, what would it be? I go, I don't even want, you're going to smack me if I give it you offer. She goes, what would it be? I'm like, it's going to be about $200,000, $75,000 less than what she had and the offer from the person down the road. Now, I'm being like transparent. Take
right,
the offer.
Right.
Let us think about it. She called us up that night. We left. She called us up. I'm like, I go, I think she's going to take the offer. She ended up coming back and she took the offer $202,500. This is a woman who had a valid offer $275,000, but why? It wasn't because I was lying or mistreating. It's because I was fully freaking transparent. I told her all the pros and all the cons, and then I let her make the decision for herself. What is best for you and your husband? They wanted a quick sale. They didn't want any hassles with anything. They didn't want the house being shown. They had a laundry list of things that it fit my criteria. If they went the other way, they were going to have to deal with all the BS and fix the property and deal with the town and the CFO. So we always, the rule in our business is when you meet somebody, put them in a better situation than when you've left them. And if that means sending them a referral to an attorney or giving them a referral for a realtor or us buying a house, whatever it is, leave them in a better position. And 99.99% of the cases, that's what happens.
Yeah, I love that. And it's so much so, you just mentioned their whole referral piece. Like, you have a very unique thing that I think Ron and I are, we really started copying a little bit, but your BillySecrets.com, it's any of your guests when they have stuff, like you put it there, right? All the stuff, all your free stuff you put there, right? And so it makes it easy for anybody listening to find. It makes it easy that you can, it's just one link. And I remember Ron and I, like our first 100 episodes, every show had a different place for people to go to get the cool thing that they could have heard. Yep. And but you're out there just trying to help provide that. So to walk us through Billy's secrets a little bit. And
yeah, so before I had the podcast, before doing any of this, the podcast, again, it's been such a blessing. It's opened up more doors for me with many different solid quality people. And it's because you guys helped me out launching it. So again, thank you. But the Billy's secrets thing, I would get phone calls and I would get emails and text messages and just random people. Sometimes they were friends. Sometimes I had no idea. Like, who do you have for this? I need somebody to do my marketing. I need a list source. Who do you use to run your comps? Well, you know, what system do you use for this? And I'm like, you know what? I can't do it anymore because I have to go on my phone. I have to look for who that person is. Then I have to copy it, send it over. And it's not that I don't want to help, but if you do that 2 or 3 times a day, 5-10 minutes, it just eats up your time. I said to my assistant, I'm done. I want to be able to serve, but I want to be able to do it on my terms. Put up Billy's secrets, every friggin' secret I have, every tool, every trick, every system, every whatever it is, dump it on there. And when we have a new one, put it on. Give the link to the people when they call in. If somebody emails me, I have an autoresponder, goes right back out. Hey, because I have different emails. Go to Billy's Secrets if you want to learn about XYZ. If they call me, I send them over to my assistant. Oh, yeah, I think he has it on Billy's Secrets. So it just brings everything in. It's nice and simple because I like simple. Go to Billy's Secrets. Any tool I use, and if I talk about it on the podcast, I don't have to remember what the URL is. Oh, go to Billy's Secrets. Just look at Deal Finder. Go to Billy's Secrets, look at the MLS comp map. It's just easy, man. It just keeps it simple, easy. Everybody knows where to go. Go to Billy's Secrets, and you'll find out all my secrets that I use, my tools, my tips, my tricks, everything inside the business, and those that my guests use, because I have a lot of guests who have some killer freaking programs. Guys on that just are knocking it out of the park with certain things, and instead of having it all over the place in 50 different spots like you guys were doing, one spot, easy, keep it simple.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And we loved it. We loved it. So much so, we're not going to give it away. There's a surprise coming for you. I think I've teased it to you. but we loved it so much that we've implemented it for our own stuff. It's like, because the other piece it does, it gets the people that you're serving to know, like, and trust you even more.
Yeah.
Because you're the person that's categorizing it, making sure it's easy to find. Yep. They don't have to go search it. Anytime, like Google, I love Google, but every time I'm sick, if I Google what it is, I'm dying. Like, I'm going to be dead pretty soon. So my wife's like, why even bother? And I go, well, I Googled it. I'm going to be dying soon. So we should go upstairs for like 10 minutes. I'm going to get mad if she's listening to that. Sorry, honey. But no, I think, again, it goes back to you wanting to serve people and you wanting to help people and get them in that better spot. Listening to your show and how you're able to do things, you're always innovating. Like, for, I don't know a ton of people in real estate. I know maybe 5, and none of them are innovating, especially in this time. One guy goes, oh, I went to Paris for a month and a half. I go, what? I mean, great, you went to Paris for a month and a half. That did nothing for your business. Like, now you're so far behind.
Yeah.
Like, for you to go, okay, I've been here before. I'm going to sit down. I'm going to lock myself in. I know what to do. I'm going to just pound and you'll get back out of it. But what's cool, and hopefully the listeners are listening to this, you found better processes that work better for your team. So in the long run, they're going to provide more value to your company and your customers because you provided value to them by letting them work from home that they said, hey, it's working. And I'm sure one helps with overhead and two, it's probably working for you as well.
Dude, I love the virtual lifestyle. I could work from anywhere. We went to Puerto Rico for a month and
I said Costa Rica.
Dang. Yeah. I mean, we didn't skip a beat. It's like you could work from anywhere when you're virtual, but you know, getting back to the processes and the systems and the people, when I had the mortgage bank, the mistake I made back then is that I really didn't have I had systems, but not nearly as good as they are now. They weren't dialed in. And whenever I had problems, I would throw a person at the problem. I started loading bodies on instead of dealing with the issue at hand, which was there was a break in the system. So you'll hear a lot of people, entrepreneurs, they're touting online, systems. Yes, you need systems, you need processes, but without the right people, your systems are shit. So you have to build out your systems, you have to build out your processes, but then you have to have a hiring process to recruit the right people in, get the right people identified, put them into the right seats, give them the processes and the systems that they have to utilize, set the criteria, and then let them run. Hold them accountable. You know, you have accountability calls, but let them do what they do. Don't micromanage and just let them grow. And to, for me, it's working. If I would have had this mindset, again, it only comes from experience and failing. If I would have had this mindset and this experience when I opened the mortgage bank, forget it. But everything happens for a reason. I wasn't supposed to go down that path anymore. You know, it was like, I didn't like the lifestyle of having 950 employees underneath my supervision. I didn't like working 18-hour days and flying all across the United States trying to raise money and go public. Like, it was fun at the time, but when I look back, dude, I was like, just, I would have done things different.
Yeah.
I would have done it different.
Two things on that. One, I want you to share your hiring process, because I've heard some of the craziness that you put people through, the ringer that you put people through to get to it. But then obviously it weeds out those that don't fit the bill. And then two, I think you were buying a place out in Puerto Rico, right? Like a hotel or something.
I was going to ask about that.
Yeah. So let's go back on the hiring part first. So the hotels and the houses, that's a story. right. So on the hiring side, so I believe systems, again, you want to try to leverage as technology as best as you can. And when you're hiring somebody, you want them to basically self-eliminate. And how do they do that? So the first thing I do, and I do this in every ad that I put out. Right now I'm hiring for construction workers. I'm using a similar format with the ad when I'm doing construction workers, sales guys, an assistant, a bookkeeper, doesn't matter who it is. They might have different things, different hoops they have to jump through, because I'm not going to have a sales guy do the same thing as an executive assistant or a contractor do the same thing. But the basis of the ad is the same. And all the ads, my ad, all my friends make fun of me. They all said, you're an idiot. Who the hell is going to read it? I'll tell you who's going to read it. The people who want the freaking job is going to read it. The ones that don't want to work with me are going to make fun of it. The ones that are never going to follow directions are going to read half of it and get lost. And the ones that resonate with the language I'm using in these ads, it puts them in a trance and it connects with them and it sucks them into my world. And I have people banging down my door. When they go through the whole process, they're like, yo, I just want to come in and work with you. I want to work with your company. So what's different? The ad itself, it's not your normal ad. Qualifications, how many years, expertise, computer skills. It is me having a conversation in writing in an ad format to them of the type of person we're looking for, who this is meant for, what they're going to gain when they work for us, the types of personalities we're looking for. If you have these qualities, and I'll go in detail, like if you are a stickler for, and I can't remember the language I use, but I can't even remember, but if you do certain things and like this is the person we're looking for and it stands out. And then at the end of it, and these ads are long, like I'm talking pages, they're so long I can't post them on LinkedIn or Facebook because it's too much copy. I have to actually cut some of it off. That's how long.
Wow.
But it does certain things. And then what I do from there, depending on who I'm marketing for, if it's a construction guy or a sales guy or an executive assistant, I'll have them self-eliminate by jumping through hoops. So in the ad, it gives them specific instructions. If it's a sales guy, I'm going to say in the ad, listen, if you think you're right for this position and you're an A player and you're going to knock it out of the ballpark, this is what I want you to do. Pick up this phone right now, dial this number, and on there, I want you to tell me in your words why you're the number one rock star sales guy we're looking for to bring you in. And guess what that's going to do? The guys who are weak, the girls who are weak, they're going to be like, I'm not going to call. Right. The ones who are stuck over the phone who think they're good and they call in and they have no personality, they're not able to sell me over the phone, they self-eliminate. The ones that don't follow instructions self-eliminate, but you get the cream of the crop by doing it. And then once they come in, it's a whole other process. You're going to take them through and do personality profiles. You're going to have them take certain tests. And then once they take all these various tests and they go through a very trying interview process, then and only then are they going to get accepted for the job. And it's like, it's a self-eliminating campaign. And it works because my executive assistant, who is a rock star, the girl, she's fucking killer. And she, you know, Cole uses her, like she is killing it. She and probably, it was maybe 325 people that applied. Only 15 of the 325 followed directions the right way. So I just saved myself all that bullshit time. I didn't have to deal with it. I dealt with 15 applications, notch applications. And then from the 15, I had them go through and take a personality profile test. I had a guy do those professional interviews. He knocked the 15 down to 7. So now I'm looking at 7 resumes versus 325 weeding through the bullshit. If you're an executive assistant, you can't follow simple freaking directions on the first interview you're going to spend the rest of your life with. Why the hell would I want to hire you if you can't follow directions from the beginning?
Yeah. Yeah. I love it because you're setting the expectations, like without even saying you're setting the expectations.
Correct.
Right. You're saying, here's kind of the bar. You can play at the bar. You cannot play at the bar. Cause at the end of the day, this is the company I've built. These are the people we want to bring in, and you either hit that bar or you don't. Yeah. If you don't hit the bar, you're going to self-eject. I love it.
Yeah. And even if they hit the bar and they have they follow directions, but they don't have the right values and the right personality, they're out. You got to be a match for the company.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So it works. I would highly recommend anybody out there who's hiring, just look at the way I'm hiring, copy it. I got it from somebody years back. This guy was an internet marketer and I heard him talk and he said, this is how I hired my first assistant. And I'm like, holy shit, like this is phenomenal. And then I took it and I tweaked it and I added some of my own stuff and I just made it my own over the years and it works.
Love it. All right.
What about the other story? We're waiting on that story.
The second story.
All right, so Puerto Rico, God, I love Puerto Rico. I can't wait to, I'm going to be moving there full time within 3 years. So,
I told my wife, I was like, because Corey and I have talked about Puerto Rico, Costa Rica. Yeah. I said, Billy's buying a hotel. Like, that's cool. Like, you could just live in the hotel if you really wanted to until you found the right spot.
Bro. I mean, they're like, these places out there, these are not, 400 unit hotels. These are 20 unit, 25 unit, just put boutique on the ocean. Overlooking everything. So we went through, we culled it down to two plus a house and I ended up losing them all. Because I'm an investor. I'm not going to, are houses. I have a criteria.
Right.
I'm going through the whole thing. Nothing, I couldn't make the deals work. And I'm like, look, I'm not playing on emotion. I'm not going to keep on bidding myself up. It's not worth it. If the numbers work, the numbers work. We're either going to get it at this number or I'm going to pass and move on to the next one. So this time we went out there for a month. Close, very close. No cigar. But you know what? This is the next time. I'm not in a rush because I can't move there immediately. So when the right opportunity comes, we're going to be ready for it. You guys were hoping I got the hotel. We're going to start having mastermind out there, right?
Right. You might have to go check it out, make sure it's all good. We have a podcast studio there.
That's great.
Yeah, definitely. I didn't realize it didn't go through, but I love that you, even though you're emotional to move, you were not emotional of that decision. I love that.
No way. When it comes down to investing and everything to me is an investment, the numbers have to make sense. I'm not going to just buy it on my emotional heartstrings just because I need it. I don't need it. If the numbers work and this is my cap and if it's going to go over, I'm not going to do it. And it's the same thing with residential real estate here. When we're buying even the commercial real estate we have a drug rehab center, an old age facility we invested in. The numbers have to work. If the numbers don't work, it's a pass on the deal. You try to negotiate best you can, but the market there, just like here, it's so freaking hot right now. It's like the wrong time really to buy, to be honest with you, because everybody's overbidding, man.
Okay, I got a story about that. So my wife and I, we were moving back to Colorado and we left before marijuana was legal. So we came back and all of a sudden there's pot shops like everywhere. It's crazy. But they were buying houses to make their money legal, buying and selling houses, right? So we found this house out over by Corey. It was up in that part of town and I freaking loved the house, but we were getting outbid by everybody. And this house I wanted, right? And so we offered him $25,000 over asking.
Yep.
My wife was not happy about it. And she goes, if you like it, we'll get it. The guy countered me, Billy. He countered me back $10,000 more. I go, time out, dude. Like, you don't get to do that. Like, I don't understand. Like, here's your number. I gave you this much more. So now I'm pulling the deal. I'm not interested anymore. And that was the hardest thing I had to do. The house we did end up buying, funniest story, I found it on a coming soon ad, because that's everything in Colorado was coming soon. They'd pump it for a couple weeks.
Yep.
And then it would skyrocket and no one could touch it, right? We get to CNN and I go, I'm going to call the realtor. I go, hey, I'm in town this weekend only. I know I can't see it till next weekend. If I can't see it this weekend, I'm not here next weekend. So I'm not even going to bid. I go, so I would like to at least see it before I'm going to bid because I won't even be in town, which was all BS. So I come in and I look at the house and it's exactly what my wife wanted. And I call the realtor, goes, well, what do you think? I go, I hate it. I'm not interested. I'm not going to do it. She goes, okay. So I waited about 2 hours. I called her back. I go, my wife was talking to me. She kind of likes the house. I'm not interested in the house. So I'm just going to do this as a favor to her. This is the only deal you're going to get from me. It's $1,000 over asking. If you put it on the market, you'll never hear from me again. The deal is today or never. They took it.
But it's about the way you posture, because you came in with confidence. And there's a whole psychological thing that goes on with that. And you just acted as if, and you took your whole emotional piece out of it, which is what we're talking about. When you do anything on emotion, the other people see it, they sense it, and they will knock you to your knees. So you got to take the emotional part out of everything and just like straight faced.
Yeah.
This is hard.
It was hard because the other side of the story, Billy, my wife was like literally about to give birth to our second child. We were staying at her dad's house and she goes, I swear, if I have this baby at my dad's house, I'm going to be so mad. We moved into this house. The first thing I did was paint the baby's room, finish the baby's room, put the baby's room together. That's the next day Phelan was born.
Oh, timing, baby.
It was the craziest thing. But so in that type of market, because I know the answer, but I'm going to ask you anyway. In that kind of market, is there still a space where you can get homes, how you get homes to help people?
I mean, so great question. We're right now, and you guys are in Colorado?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, so it's probably like that there, because it seems like it's like this around the whole country right now, except for the major cities. The market is completely on fire. I've never seen it this hot before in my entire life. And there's people who post on Facebook, I just got 30,000 over asking for my house. Like everybody's getting over asking because that's just the market right now. There's no inventory. But to answer your question, we're still buying properties under value. So the way the play for me in this day and age is when we're going in, you can no longer just buy a property if it's worth three, buy it for 200, put in 30,000 and make yourself a quick 100,000 if it's worth four. You have to come in, you have to add value. Right. So these are all value add plays. Very little of the deals that are coming out right now, very small portion of them, you're going to be able to go in, just do a little renovation to them and make some good cash. So right now it's about adding second stories. It's about expanding out the back. It's about knocking them down and repurposing the whole entire piece of land. So there's still deals there. You just need to have the vision to figure out how you can best capitalize on the deals, on the real estate deals that are coming across your desk. And some of them, they don't need anything. Like we just had a property around the corner. We closed on it last week. I did a short video on it. The guy, it's legitimately worth, and it's as is condition. It's a 5-bedroom, 3-bath, might be a 4-bedroom, 3-bath, 3,000 square foot home, minted out. Kitchen is a little old. When I say a little old, maybe 10 years old. This guy sold us a property for 4.25. He left every article that he owned except for his personal clothes in the home. His wife died five years earlier. He was holding on to the house. He couldn't emotionally get rid of it. And this is another guy. Like I told you the story earlier. This gentleman, we told him, listen, you'll get it. He says, I don't want to list it. I don't want to be bothered. I don't want people coming through my home. I don't want to fix anything. I don't even want to take any of the furniture out. I just want you to make me a cash offer. I go, I wouldn't even know where to start. He gave me the number, 425. I go, you can get a whole hell of a lot more on the market. He goes, I don't want to be bothered. I'm happy with the number. Could you close in 30 days? So that property is going to net us $175,000.
Yeah,
way to clean it out. I mean, so the deals are there. You just have to, again, you need to be smart with your marketing. You need to be transparent with your sellers. You need to tell them exactly what's going on. Put them in a better position. Just be transparent. Talk to them. Don't sell them. Talk with them. Just have conversation. When you have conversation with people, stuff comes out. And if that stuff comes out, it's a problem that you can solve. If you solve that problem, that's where you get your deals, because they don't look at you as a salesperson. You're a problem solver, and problem solvers put people in a better position regardless of the price. Price is important, but not to everybody. It's important to 25% of the people we come in contact with. The rest of them, there's a problem that they want a solution to. And so in this market, second stories, extensions off the back, but there's still deals you can make. You just have to know how to go about getting them. And there's a whole process that you have to go through to identify those sellers that are going to want to sell their property and sell their property for cash. Like, we spent a lot of money on a data scientist to figure this shit out for us, to really take the whole population of where we're living, either New York or New Jersey, and boil it down. And he'll say, like, these 10,000 homes in all this whole area, these are the ones that have the highest propensity to sell and to sell for cash at a discount. And this is the reason why. And that's like, you spend a lot of money to get that. But when you have the marketing systems to market to those types of sellers, and you can get them on the phone and you can converse with them and you could show them there is a better way, and it's a win for them and a win for you. Dude, I'm telling you, I don't care how the market's going. You just have to, you said before, you have to roll with it. You need to like always reinvent yourself. We're always reinventing and we're always like not looking at what's happening. We're looking at what's going on. What's the future going to hold? And we're always at one step ahead of the curve.
Yeah. Hey, Corey, can I say one thing? Because I know it's your turn, but I'm totally interrupting because he mentioned something that I remember listening to the podcast and it made me click and I started talking to my wife about it. So there was a house. It was a ranch house you bought and you were talking about comps. And there was no comps in this neighborhood for other ranches at all. And I was like, God, that's crazy. This person, it was the only ranch house that was built, blah, blah, blah. That's where my mind went. Your mind went to exactly what was happening. People were buying houses and adding second stories to it.
Yep.
So you couldn't find a comp of a ranch because there was no second story. So the only way to have a comp is include a second story and then you have a comp. And I was like, oh my gosh, I told my wife, I go, this is crazy. Like, who would have even thought of it? And then I told Corey, and then that's when we got in the argument about he misses editing your show.
Yes. All right. So I have an idea of what your answer might be. In hindsight, $14 million in debt, just started to climb and claw your way back. What's that tip that you would share with everybody here listening or watching today? And my guess, in case it's this one, maybe you have something else, is the MFA, is the take action on the little stuff.
So you know what, Corey, you would think that's what I would say, but if I go back and I bring myself to the time when I literally was holding $14 million on my back and I had multiple lawsuits and I had things going on that when you experience, and listen, everybody has their own challenges. Thank God my health was good. So it wasn't a health thing that I had cancer and I had to overcome it. But when you're dealing with that much debt and that much uncertainty and you have bank accounts locked up, houses being foreclosed on, car getting repoed, like it really puts a ton of weight on somebody's shoulders. So I'd be lying to you if I said, Corey, man, it's all about MFA and I just made it happen in massive fucking action. I'd be lying because the truth of the matter is I was so beat up. From 2006 to 2009, I couldn't get out of my own way. And what really got me to the next level was just starting to take small action. Because when you're dealing with the weight of the world on your shoulders and you have, and you, it seems like the world is against you and you can't get out of bed in the morning, it's hard to listen to a motivational speaker when you have your head, when you're on your knees praying to God that you're going to get out of this. It's almost impossible for you to listen to that motivational guy saying, take MFA. You're like, F you, dude. There's no right to get out of bed. It's true. So this isn't the answer, but a bunch of things I would do. But to address that, it's not MFA. It's wherever you're at in life, at whatever stage you're at, whether you're on your knees praying for God that you have a miracle happen or you're rocking and rolling, depending on where you're at on that continuum, you're going to take a different action. So for me, when I was down and out, it was just taking small, consistent steps. It was doing something to get myself going. Something. Something is anything. And for me, like at one point, it was just literally taking a shower in the morning because I went fucking almost a couple of weeks with no shower. I would not shower because I was so like disgusting. I know, but it's the truth. I couldn't get out of my own way because I was so depressed and I had such the weight on my shoulders. So depending on where you're at, it's going to depend on what you're going to do. But in hindsight, I think one of the things that people have to do is they need to act faster. So to save that company that went out of business, I should have acted faster. I ran with my heart, not with my head. I think that if getting back out of this, I believe that all it is making a decision and then making a commitment and then doing something daily to go forward. And you have to realize, no matter what you're going to do, and I said this in my podcast 100 times, you're going to fail, you're going to F up, you're going to screw up, you're going to lose. All of those are experiences, learning experiences to get yourself to the next level. And when I made my decision in 2009 to take this path that I'm on, it wasn't easy. It wasn't overnight. Like, things are great. It was hard freaking work daily. But I refused. And this is the mindset piece that came into play. I refused to quit. And when you get that in your head, whenever you tell yourself enough, you will start to believe it and your whole body will change. Your physiology will change. You will act as if until you actually become it. it's a sick thing, but this piece, this mind, this brain thing up here, it is the most powerful thing in the world. And if you could program yourself to get yourself to that next level, I don't care where you're at. It's, and again, it's not going to be easy. I'm not sitting here saying it's easy. It's a walk in the park. It's not. It's fucking hard work. It's grinding and hard work and getting beat up and getting said no and thinking that things are going sideways. It's just every single day getting up and making something happen and knowing that your shit's going to go sideways, but just knowing that you're going to constantly go forward. I know that was a long-winded response, Corey, but I mean, I'd be lying to you if I said it was MFA.
And again, but that goes back to how genuine you are, because I would have guessed that was the answer too. Like, honestly, right? And if you told us the answer, we would have all said, yep, that was the answer, because that makes sense. But that was vulnerable. That was real. That was awesome. And I think that's why you are so successful in what you're doing and why people are coming to partner with you. And that kind of leads me into, I know there's people listening. I know you're focused on New York and New Jersey, but how can people connect with you? How can they get involved with you? How can they get into your world?
Yeah, absolutely. So all over social media, Unstoppable BA, Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram. If you want to partner with me, if you have deals, you want to start partner, if you're a wholesaler, a renovator, if you need cash, go to BillyAlvaro.com. Again, simple, BillyAlvaro.com. On there, it's learn, partner, invest with Billy. Choose one of those. Now, the whole learn with Billy, I had a whole platform 2 years ago that I did one-on-ones. The one-on-one thing just took a lot of energy, so I'm building out a platform to teach one to many. And that is going to be coming out where I'm going to teach them. They're going to get Billy in a box, all me, genuine, give my secrets, like deep shit. And then from there, they'll have a basis where they can actually start partnering with me, because I at least want somebody to have a little understanding of what they're doing. It's hard when they come in with raw and you have to train from the beginning.
Right.
And Ron and I sign up to learn with.
We just go to the learn, the invest, or the partner with. That.
You guys have my cell phone, man. All you guys have to do is call me. I was on whose podcast was I just on? You guys did him. Tony's podcast. I was on Tony, right? Because yeah. I was another guy. So Tony's like, afterwards, I did his podcast. Like, yo, I want to do this. I'm like, Tony, I did a 3-day event. I have everything recorded. I'll give you everything for free. Just give me your email address. My girl in the office will take it. So if you guys want the same thing, 3 days, it's like you'll get 80% of the stuff that you need to get you started in real estate, like deep marketing systems, the secrets, the tricks, all the crap. Like I did this 3-day event. I should have charged $5,000. I charged like $297. And I just gave, dude. I just like gave. And it was the best
feeling. You got goosebumps, man. Holy smokes.
Well, yeah. It was so good. It was just so much fun giving like that.
Well, it's amazing. And we have stories upon stories. And if you're listening to the show, you've heard me talk about it. If you give without expecting in something in return, we had one client, literally, what was it? $197 client. And I spent hours with him. Because he accomplished something to be on iTunes. He didn't use us for the launch. He just wanted a logo. And he kept saying he was on iTunes. And I was like, dude, you're not on iTunes. Like, you're not there. And he goes, I go, did you get submitted and stuff? He goes, oh, you have to submit? I go, well, yeah, you have to submit. So I'm up till like 1 a.m. getting this done. My wife's like, what are you doing? I go, he's a really nice guy. He's an older gentleman. And I finally go, hey, just give me all your login information. I know we just met. Just give me everything and I'll set you up. I'll just set you up. You'll be good to go. Didn't charge him anything for that. Just it was the right thing to do. He was happy. He's referred over 20 grand easy tests in referrals and nice guy. But again, that kind of stuff happened over and over again. And people are so afraid to just give. And I'm telling you, one, it will make the world a better place. And that's why we changed our hashtag to impactors, because we only want to help people that are trying to impact the world in a better way. Yeah. Right. Everybody wants to make money for a reason. We've turned people away that come to us that want to work with us. And all they want to do is make money. We're not the people to work with. If that's all you want, money's great. But if you have to be in it for other people and want to help other people, and want to make it a better place in a good spot. You fit that 100%, and we love working
that's
with you.
We get along, guys, because we live in different parts of the world, but we're on the same paths. We have similar values. We have similar drives. We're all entrepreneurs, and we don't give a shit. We don't care.
Right.
And it makes a difference. People know when you really care. And they sense it. You can't hide it. It's going to come out. They're going to feel it. And you ever around somebody where you're saying one thing and they're saying the words, but you're looking at them and you're like, I'm not getting that vibe.
Oh yeah.
I'm not getting what you're selling right now. And when you're around somebody though, who's genuine, like you feel it, you see it when they're speaking to you, you can feel their passion. And like, you know, they want to genuinely help somebody and put them in a better position. Look, I love getting paid for what I do. I love it, but I give more. The sick thing is just like you said, it's coming back to me tenfold.
Yep.
So exactly. Why am I not going to, I'm going to give as much as I can.
Because I'm going to get tenfold back. I'm not going to, I'm going to get the bigger dollars instead of the pennies that I'm going to be holding onto. Yeah. Love it.
So I have one last question for you, Billy. You've had several people on your show that they do real estate all over the country, and you're really, it seems to be in the New York, New Jersey area. Is there a specific reason you haven't really ventured nationwide or?
So you're hitting on something right now. You must have ESP because we just had this conversation. We are really figuring out how we can take this thing nationally. And I'm speaking with a bunch of different people. Now, I'm not going to do it where I'm renovating because I don't want to have the, it's a lot with contractors. I said that in the opening or right beforehand. It's a lot managing a company with contractors. So on the renovation side, it's going to stick in a few different areas. But if I do partnerships with people who can renovate and we have the capital and we can put the money to work with them and do a 50-50 joint venture split in other states, I mean, yeah, so it's definitely something where we're not committed to it. We're seriously looking at it right now to see if this is something we want to go down. Because look, I have lofty goals. The wholesale and the renovation company, it's crushing it. I want to get to that $10 million mark with that business. But on the flip side, with the apartment investing, like I want to acquire 5,000 units over the next 10 years. And I got to get my ass in gear. So this is the reason why, like, I'm out working again and I'm making shit happen. I'm physically right now actively looking for an operational COO type individual that can come in and oversee and help me run all the companies that we have so I can extract myself and go do the other things that I really have a passion for. But I don't want to just leave the company as it is. I need a person that's going to have that drive to run this business for me, the COO, the implementer, that particular person.
Love it. Love it.
So good. All right. So I don't know, Ron, if he'll come to Colorado because Colorado's real estate is crazy.
I'm trying to go to real estate. I may know a guy in Colorado, Billy. I may know maybe one or two.
I could probably get over 100 asking price on my home right now. So
it's we bought this house 5 years ago. It's doubled in price.
What? That's insane.
Yeah.
I got a dude out in Colorado, Michael Jake. I'm friends with him and a super guy. He's in one of the groups that I'm in. And he's crushed it out there. I mean, I think he has close to 300 rentals out in Colorado. Like his whole play is buy, hold. He does a lot of creative financing, subject to, like really smart individuals. So there's deals out there, but depending on where you go, like, you got to go sometimes a little bit of the outskirts. You're not going to be going to Vail and shit and stuff.
No, not going to go where the cabin is in Aspen. All right, Billy, we appreciate it. Let everybody know exactly where to find you again. I know Billy's Secrets and BillyAlvera.com.
Yeah.
Anything else?
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, I don't think this is the second four, but no, that's good. BillyAlvera.com for sure. Billy's Secrets, if you want to learn all my tools, tips, and tricks, you go right there. And then also Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, Unstoppable BA. And that is where we're at.
Awesome. Thanks, Billy.
Thanks, Billy. It's been awesome having a conversation. It's been a while, so it's nice to have you here.
Good to see you, Corey. Ronnie, thank you so much, guys. I appreciate the both of you.
Take care.